Namaste, my friends. Welcome back. Or if you're new here, welcome to the podcast. The Harmony Inspired Health Podcast brings you raw and real conversations from leaders in the industry about all things health, wellness, Ayurveda, and life. My name is Harmony, and I am your podcast host. I am an Ayurveda and integrative health practitioner who specializes in women's hormonal health, a registered nurse, and a business mentor. I'm on a mission to inspire, educate, and empower women to take charge of their health, wealth, and life. Don't forget to subscribe so that you don't miss an episode. And if you listen on iTunes, please give us a 5-star rating so the wisdom shared in these episodes can be spread far and near. Thank you so much from my soul to yours. Before we jump into this soulful episode, I want to remind you that this episode is sponsored by my accredited program, Ayurveda Alchemist. This program certifies you as an Ayurveda holistic health coach. Ayurveda Alchemist is for women who are ready to embark on an epic personal development journey, immersing themselves in the wisdom of Ayurveda, learning how to optimize their health and well-being by addressing all aspects of self, including their physical body, mental and emotional health, and spirituality, whilst wholeheartedly stepping into their dharma, their purpose. This program is also for women who would love to get started with a fulfilling career in Ayurveda, and for already established health, wellness, and life coaches who want to create greater impact by offering a holistic framework that gets their clients exceptional and holistic results. This certification is what you need to step into the high-level practitioner that you were born to be and stand out from the coaching crowd. You will experience undeniable growth personally and professionally. You will be mentored by highly qualified facilitators, guest experts, and practitioners. Spots are strictly limited. If you are ready to up-level your life and help transform the lives of others by becoming an Ayurveda alchemist, head over to www.harmonyinspiredhealth.com.au and apply today. Now, let's get into today's episode. Hello and welcome back to the podcast, and a beautiful warm welcome to all of our Ayurveda and Women's Health Sisterhood members in the Facebook group. If you're not there, come and join us so that we can carry these conversations on long after they have finished. Today, we are talking all about histamine intolerance, our hormones, and we're even going to touch on SIBO, and you'll see how that all connects, because we're going to have the lovely Joanne Kennedy helping us out. Joanne is a naturopath and she's a specialist in the MTHFR gene, histamine intolerance, gut health, specifically SIBO, and women's hormones. Joanne runs a successful clinical practice in Sydney, Australia, and sees patients online worldwide. Joanne's approach is to identify the root cause of illness. This is done by the use of functional pathology testing, assessing the biochemical individuality of each patient, assessing environmental exposures, as well as individual genetic testing if required. So welcome to the podcast, Joanne.
Hi, Harmony. Thank you so much for having me.
You're so welcome. We have a lot in common. I am also a hormone and SIBO practitioner, so I think we're going to have a really fun conversation. So thank you. I really appreciate you being here and sharing all of your expertise with us. I can't wait to dive in on histamine intolerance. I do get asked about histamine a lot, so this is going to be a really interesting episode. Before we dive in, I always like to start off with our rapid inspiration question. So can you inspire us with what your superpower is?
My superpower?
Yeah.
Well, clinically, my superpower is to really quickly cut through the nonsense and previous prescriptions and testing that people have done that's not necessary and get to the crux of it really, really fast. Mm-hmm. That is definitely my superpower as a practitioner.
Wonderful. Yeah. And one that patients or clients would really appreciate, which
is awesome. Yeah, they do. So sometimes I work really fast, but that's because I can quickly see things. Awesome. So, yeah.
And do you have a favorite quote or mantra that you live by?
If you cannot swallow it, let it go. Otherwise, it will poison you.
Ooh, and you came up with that so quick.
I don't know. Something, it's more than that. Even if it's bright and shiny and tastes delicious, if you cannot digest it, you need to let it go.
Yeah.
We're not talking about food, are we? We're just talking about general people and life things that are not right for us.
Yeah. Absolutely. And who or what is inspiring you at the moment?
I'm reading a great book called The One Thing. Now, don't ask me who's written it. Gary, someone. And have you read that book?
Yes, love it, recommend it. And I still can't tell you who wrote it. But it's amazing.
The One Thing. I find, from a big picture business point of view, around really understanding what's going to drive your business forward, and like in domino effect it, and then on a micro level, what do you need to do each day? The one thing that you need to domino effect, little thing. It can be little things, but there's also the big picture at the end. So I find it really useful.
Absolutely. And I also think I found it so useful because I'm someone who has so many different ideas and can get really off track with like the shiny object syndrome, you know, thinking, I want to do that too, I want to do that. And it is okay in that phase where you're all creative, but then it can lead to a lot of overwhelm and burnout. So I read that when I was amongst a little overwhelmed period in my life. And I thought, yes, just focus. It's so good. So to start the conversation off, I would love to start on histamine intolerance. So could you please explain to us what is histamine intolerance?
Okay. So our body makes histamine. It's part of our biochemistry. It's, you know, it's got a lot of roles, but it really is a major part of our immune system. Okay. So it's a big part of what we call the inflammation cascade. So when our body is challenged by a toxin or an infection, it will cause inflammation. That's normal. And histamine is released to vasodilate blood vessels. And that allows the white blood cells to go to the site of injury to repair. Now, this process can become chronic. And we see this in chronic illness because chronic illness is essentially uncontrolled inflammation, and then that uncontrolled inflammation will continually release a lot of histamine. Okay, now we have histamine receptors all over our body. Okay, it is used as a neurotransmitter in the brain, and this is what a lot of people don't really understand, that in the brain it's really important for wakefulness and memory. It helps release serotonin, it helps release dopamine. But when it gets too high, it can cause headaches, migraines, vertigo, insomnia, anxiety, issues regulating your body temperature. We also have histamine receptors throughout our gut. One in particular is the H2 receptor in our stomach that releases hydrochloric acid. Okay, and this is why people can have a lot of chronic reflux and heartburn when their histamines are too high. We have histamine receptors all over our skin. Okay, even in the sebaceous glands where acne is formed. So it's a major cause of acne, hives, obviously, lots of chronic skin issues, eczema. We actually have histamine receptors on the ovaries, and this is where the big deal with estrogen and histamine comes into play, because histamine helps release estrogen from the ovaries. But when your histamine's too high, that is going to cause your estrogen to be too high, right? So we have estrogen dominance and then a histamine cascade. So histamine's part of our biochemistry, okay? But when it gets too high, it can cause quite significant and seemingly unrelated health issues and symptoms, okay? Now, the other thing with histamine and why we call it histamine intolerance is basically your histamine bucket fills up when you've got chronic inflammation, and the enzyme, the DAO enzyme that breaks down histamine in the gut, when you have inflammation in the gut, which is a major cause of why you've got histamine in the first place, your ability to synthesize and secrete the DAO enzyme is compromised, or the DAO enzyme simply might be overloaded with histamine. Okay, so you will then the DAO enzyme, it deals with histamine being made in the gut predominantly from bacteria, SIBO, right? But it also is the enzyme that breaks down histamine from food. So you become intolerant to histamine foods because your enzyme's overloaded. Okay, so that's what histamine intolerance is. You know, people can't really come to grips with the fact that you can be intolerant to your body's own own substances, but that is essentially what happens. It happens with sulfur and other things as well. Okay, so it's too much being made and not enough ability to break it down.
Just like autoimmune disease, like it's just our body's reaction to our body.
Your body, our body's overreacting to what's being made. It happens with sulfur, it happens obviously with autoimmune conditions. So and it's extremely common.
And so what are the signs and symptoms of histamine intolerance?
Okay, so the classic signs and symptoms are people will get the obvious sinusitis, runny nose, blocked nose, itchy eyes, ears, nose, throat. Gut issues, reflux and heartburn is so often high histamine. I 90% of my patients have been misdiagnosed with something else. It's histamine. It can stimulate peristalsis. So it can be like quite constant, like loose stools or just like frequent bowel motions. It definitely causes bloating. It definitely causes abdominal pain. And it can cause nausea. The skin is a big thing. So it's eczema, hives, itchy skin, random rashes. It plays a part in rosacea, the big cause of acne. Cardiovascular system, it can cause high blood pressure. It can cause heart palpitations. Neurologically, insomnia, vertigo, headaches, migraines, inability to regulate your body temperature. Motion sickness. It's funny, the nausea comes from the brain, actually. Estrogen, right? It stimulates the ovaries to release estrogen. So this causes estrogen dominance. So you're getting that premenstrual estrogen dominance symptoms such as breast tenderness, bloating, fluid, retention, low mood. And then what can happen is you get a heightened, your histamine symptoms, your pre-existing histamine symptoms. Or you might not have had any histamine symptoms before, but when you've got high estrogen, it will increase histamine. So histamine increases estrogen and estrogen increases histamine. So what will happen is you get premenstrual headaches, migraines, nausea, and it heightened anxiety. It can also be low progesterone, but it can also contribute to that anxiety picture. It will also happen at ovulation when your estrogen is at its peak level. So it plays absolute havoc with estrogen and hormones. So I think I've gone through all the systems in my head, but you can see that it's a very, very widespread symptom picture.
There are so many symptoms with histamine intolerance, and I think also like different individual symptoms. So it doesn't mean that you have to have all of them. But if someone is experiencing a lot of the symptoms that you've explained, how do they find out if they have true histamine intolerance?
Oh, okay. So that's a really good question. I really believe that the diagnosis is just knowing what you're looking for clinically, because the testing for histamine, you can do a blood histamine test. And the thing with blood histamine is histamine gets broken down in by methylation, right, as well. Okay, so people can be methylating well, and their histamine levels are normal in the blood, but they're having massive issues with histamine due to gut issues or estrogen, and they're covered in hives, right? Like that's histamine. I have had patients, when I was first learning about histamine, I had a patient with really, really low histamine in her blood, 0.3, but she was taking methylated nutrients to support methylation, right? But her symptoms, she was covered in hives. That was her symptom. So that is classic histamine. Okay, so it is a real, I think once you start to understand the biochemistry of histamine and how it's released with chronic inflammation, and you just write down all of these symptoms, you'll start to see a pattern very, very quickly. Okay, so it's looking at symptoms, and then it really is looking at doing the testing for the causes. So that we need to have the conversation is around the causes, because it's the causes of histamine that we need to test for our patients. That's where they need to be spending their money, and that's where we need to be focusing on the causes. Makes sense? Yeah,
absolutely. So what are some of the causes that you see in your clinic? Influences?
Okay. So I think they've got like 14 major causes. Okay. Now, Helicobacter pylori can absolutely cause histamine intolerance. Gluten intolerance, or just too much gluten, will stimulate a lot of inflammation in the gut, can cause histamine issues. SIBO is, you know, the major cause of IBS globally. That is a significant cause of histamine intolerance. Irritable bowel disease, Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, due to the chronic inflammation that causes, will cause often histamine issues. Mold illness. Now, mold disrupts your microbiome and disrupts it causes massive inflammation in the gut and the whole body that can really cause a lot of histamine issues, almost to a point of mast cell activation syndrome, where the mast cells are berserk and can't be calmed down. Now, oxalates are a major cause of histamine. Oxalates, our body makes oxalates under duress from inflammation, from bad gut microbiome, from issues with bile acids and fatty acid metabolism, fat malabsorption, calcium deficiency, B6 deficiency. Mold contains oxalate. Some mold species contain oxalate. Estrogen, absolutely. Estrogen dominance will really, really cause, so an ability to detoxify your estrogen will cause high histamine. There's certain medications, there's some genetics things that we can think about. It's never at the top of my list to think about that, but there's always some genetic susceptibility. It's always, you know, it's normally the environment harming that's going to be causing problems. Is there one more? I think that's it. So lots of causes. Yeah.
A lot. And I think it's really important to point out here, you know, when clients come in to see you for like a condition, so histamine intolerance, for instance, it's not just about treating the histamine intolerance, because you have to find the root cause. And you've just listed like 14 of them. And the treatment pathway is for that specific diagnosis, not the histamine intolerance. So I think, a lot of people can get a little bit confused around the topic of histamine because of this. And many women have been told to go on like the histamine diet, but that might not be treating the root cause of it. So I would like to touch a little bit more on the histamine or low histamine diet, because you did speak briefly about the DAO as well, the enzyme. And so there's different foods that have trigger histamine and that it's not breaking down. So could we just like touch on that?
Yeah. So just first want to say histamine is a symptom. Mm. It's not a condition. Histamine intolerance is a symptom. High histamine in the body is a symptom of a chronic health condition that I've mentioned. Now, because histamine, there are some foods that contain histamine. There are some foods that will liberate histamine in the body. Say they are broken down, the histamine that is going to be produced or entering the gut, like fermented foods, wine is histamine. You're consuming a histamine. Now, the DAO enzyme is the enzyme that is going to be dealing with how you break down the histamine from food. So if you remove high histamine foods from your diet, you will get symptomatic relief, but it's never going to fix your problem, ever. So it's an absolute waste of time. And I have seen many people do that. They buy cookbooks on low histamine cookbooks, and they might do this process for months and months thinking that they're going to fix their problem, and it is not. And the other thing that these low histamine cookbooks will often do is ignore SIBO, the major cause of high histamine. And these people are consuming high FODMAP foods and high resistant starch. They're not high in histamine, but they are feeding SIBO and keeping their histamine bucket high. So it's just not an answer at all. Just to remove high histamine foods It can help with symptoms, and I do that, but very rarely, the only time I get women to just remove high histamine foods is when their symptoms are driven from hormone imbalance only, not gut, just hormone imbalance, and we need to fix their hormones, and sometimes that can take a few months for their cycle to balance out. And removing histamine foods from their diet can help them sleep better, stop the anxiety, calm down the migraines or whatever. But usually, because of just the way that SIBO is so common and drives histamine, I will do a SIBO low histamine diet. And that calms down the inflammation and the histamine being released and takes the load off that DAO enzyme, and it will give people really, really quick symptoms. No, it will really start to reduce the SIBO, start fixing the problem, healing the problem, and help their symptoms significantly. And then we go in and we fix the SIBO along with anything else that we need to fix.
Amazing. And I just want to circle back to how our hormones contribute to this histamine intolerance. I know migraines is such a big complaint for a lot of women around their cycle, around their period. So I know you've spoke about the estrogen dominance effect, but can we speak a little bit more on how our women's hormones contribute to the histamine intolerance?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so histamine will cause, when there is chronic inflammation in the body and histamine being released, that process causes the follicles inside the ovary to become unhealthy. Okay, they're not healthy, they're not robust, they are suffering from the chronic inflammation in the body. Okay, so what can happen is the follicles that grow from day 1 to 14, and at day 14, the dominant follicle, the healthiest dominant follicle, releases the egg. And then that follicle forms a tissue called the corpus luteum. Okay, so the corpus luteum secretes progesterone. So what we really have to understand, this is very important clinically, is if you've got chronic inflammation and histamine issues, your follicles are not going to be super healthy. Okay, and when we're looking at things that help fertility and follicles and ovulation and egg quality, it's things like N-acetylcysteine, major antioxidants and anti-inflammatory nutrients. Okay, so you know, PCOS is chronic inflammation of the ovary and no follicle development. Okay, so we've got to really understand that is going to be driving unhealthy follicles. And if your follicles are making the corpus luteum, then your corpus luteum is not going to be super healthy, and that secretes progesterone. Okay, so when you start working on reducing inflammation, histamine in the body, your follicles are naturally going to start getting healthier. Okay, that's really, really important. So what happens when your follicles aren't healthy and you don't have the nutrients in place to make progesterone? Like, you need zinc, B6, iron, vitamin D and iodine, and those nutrients need to be in place. So the more progesterone you have, the less estrogen dominant you are. That's part of why you can become estrogen dominant. The other reason you can become estrogen dominant is actually if you have histamine issues, because histamine will stimulate more and more estrogen from the ovary. Okay. Then what happens is estrogen, when it's too much, will cause mast cells to release more histamine, round and round and round and round. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then what happens with estrogen is estrogen needs to go through the liver via two pathways, phase 1 and then phase 2, which is governed by methylation. So you need methylation to be working well to detoxify your estrogen. And what hinders methylation? Malabsorption of vitamin B12. So what's going to cause that? Low hydrochloric acid, SIBO, gut issues, okay? Amongst other things, right? So if you've got gut issues and histamine issues, you're just already on the back foot when it comes to estrogen detoxification. The other thing is, estrogen needs to then go through the bowels. So if your gut's not good, you're not going to be detoxifying your estrogen properly through the bowels. If you're constipated, you're not pooping it out. If you've got a high level of beta-glucuronidase enzyme in the gut, that deconjugates estrogen, causing more toxic estrogen, and that causes more histamine. So it's just crazy. And it's so prevalent. It's so prevalent for women to be having these issues. Now, you might not have any gut issues or any inflammation, nothing, but you're just getting older. You know, you're 45 onwards, or even in your 40s, you just don't make the progesterone that you used to, and you have unopposed estrogen and you get histamine symptoms for the first time. Mm-hmm. And it's extremely common. And when we're going into the late perimenopause phase, when women are not ovulating and they're not making progesterone, then wow, like, we are high estrogen at that time. In that late perimenopause phase, we're not low estrogen, we're very high, and no progesterone, it causes a histamine storm. And women for the first time might be really suffering from migraines, for instance. They've never had them before, but all of a sudden they start getting migraines. Okay. So it's that phase of a woman's life when they're really not ovulating and you don't even want to push their ovulation. You just want it to end. Get removing high histamine foods from your diet for that phase can really help with symptom control, including hot flushes. Like I've reduced histamine in women and it stops their hot flushes. I haven't even given them herbs for hot flushes. It's crazy. Yeah. So the hormone thing it's massive, and it's 90% of women will have that.
Mm. I've noticed with a lot of my perimenopausal women, they often say that, you know, they used to be able to drink wine every Friday night or whatever it is. Yeah. And in the later years, they've noticed a lot of symptoms when they're drinking the same wine that they've been drinking forever, but getting that like itchy nose or runny nose and just feeling like more swollen fluid retention after the, after drinking the wine that they've been drinking for years. And I'm like having the same conversation with them about their hormones and the shifts there and everything like that. So yeah, it's definitely a true and real phenomenon for women, especially in the, you know, perimenopausal age. You've mentioned SIBO a number of times. I would love to chat about SIBO with you. Interestingly, like, I am a SIBO doctor practitioner, and I don't think I've actually done a SIBO episode on this podcast. I was just trying to think of that. I was like, have I even done one? So I would love to talk about that a little bit more, because histamine does play such a huge role, or SIBO does play such a huge role with histamine. So for those listening, SIBO is small intestine bacteria overgrowth. So could you please elaborate a little bit more on SIBO and its connection with histamine and what that can look like for a lot of patients? A lot of clients have never heard of SIBO and they have a lot of gut health complaints, and the symptoms for SIBO can be quite different to sort of, you know, the large bowel sort of general IBS type symptoms. So I'd love to sort of go over all of that with you as well.
Okay. So the main sort of symptoms, the SIBO can cause any gut issue, like any gut issues. Sometimes people don't have any gut issues and their histamine issue is driven from SIBO. So red flag. So it's crazy. You know, you really need to look at it. Red flag for SIBO is also really low iron. Okay. Mm. You know, you've got to consider dietary intake and heavy periods, but low iron, classic, could be SIBO. Low B12, same. So, you know, SIBO causes significant bloating. I think that's one of the key things that it definitely causes. And I really think one of the key things it causes that is not on the standard what are the symptoms of SIBO lists, it actually is reflux.
Mm.
Because of how much SIBO increases histamine, which will cause an increase in hydrochloric acid. But it's coming, it's not happening when you're chewing a steak, it's just happening at random times. Yeah. Okay. And then, you know, SIBO will cause a lot of belching, flatulence, constipation, diarrhea, distension, pain. Okay. Any gut issue. But how it causes high histamine is a few things. Okay. So the SIBO bacteria take FODMAP foods and resistant starch and they convert those foods into gas. Now, the gases are what are picked up on the tests, right? The methane or the hydrogen or the hydrogen sulfide SIBO, gases are picked up on the testing. So we're looking for in testing. Now, when you have gas, you have damaged cells, and the cells will cause inflammation cascade and a release of histamine, okay? And then at the same time, the Dao enzyme, which is highly concentrated in the small bowel, if and it's, you know, made and excreted in by the cells and the microvilli stores in there, if that's inflamed, even slightly inflamed, you're not going to be making excreting enough Dao enzyme. So you're making histamine and your Dao enzyme is compromised. You might not be making enough, or it's simply overloaded with histamine. So you can test the Dao enzyme and it will come back fine. It might come back fine. You're making enough, but you've got so much histamine, it can't deal with the load. Okay. We also really need to understand that, like with SIBO, what goes hand in hand with SIBO is significant digestive enzyme insufficiency. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you have, an acidic small intestine, which is often the breeding ground, what happens in SIBO, instead of being alkaline, it's more acidic. Your digestive enzymes, particularly your pancreatic enzymes, are not going to be working adequately. So you're simply not breaking down your food, and that will cause issues with transit time. And that will cause issues with immune function. Your immune system doesn't know why you're not breaking the foods down adequately. Okay. And that, especially if high histamine foods are going to sit rot ferment further in the small bowel. Same with meat, right? So often people will have a steak and they just can't break it down. They don't have enough hydrochloric acid, slow transit time, which is a classic SIBO issue with the migrating motor complex. That food will sit rot ferment in the small intestine and cause a histamine reaction, increase the histamine bucket. Also just the chronic constipation that can go on with SIBO. If you're not pooping out undigested food and bad bacteria, that's just going to increase histamine in your gut. It's also going to start increasing estrogen because you're not getting rid of your estrogen, again, causing more histamine. So there's lots and lots of reasons why SIBO can cause histamine. Clinically, it's if you have gut issues, you need to look at SIBO. Mm. You'd be like, if the, it's really, really important because it is the major cause of IBS.
Mm. Yeah, it just goes to show like how much everything is so connected, especially when it comes to like women's health, like our hormones, the histamine, SIBO, gut health. Yeah. And I want to also speak to you about MTH FR. Because again, everything's connected and a lot of people are not aware of this. So I would love to speak more about that and the impacts of poor methylation as well.
Yeah. Okay, so every human has an MTHFR gene. Okay, now what that gene does, it provides the code for the MTHFR enzyme in our body, okay, to function. The MTHFR enzyme, its role is to donate a methyl group to folate, and that makes methylfolate. Now, methylfolate is one of the important nutrients we need in a process called methylation. And methylation is really important for breaking histamine down in the central nervous system. It's important for estrogen detoxification, heavy metal detoxification. It helps make phosphatidylcholine, which is important for cell membranes and bile acids. Mm-hmm. It's important for energy production. It's important for neurotransmitter synthesis, amongst many other things. Okay. Now, you can have a genetic mutation on MTHFR whereby there is a potential to have a reduction in the functioning of that enzyme. However, we really need to understand that epigenetics, i.e. the environment, is what is going to cause a genetic mutation to express. So when we're thinking about folate and the metabolism of folate, if you're not eating any folate-rich foods, if you're not eating your grains, you're not going to have enough folate. It doesn't matter about a gene mutation. You simply don't have enough folate. Or if you're consuming a lot of folic acid, which is fortified in wheat, a lot of processed foods, also in supplements, if you're consuming a lot of folic acid, that actually blocks the uptake of your natural folate and can cause you to have low methylfolate. So it's not just a gene mutation, it's what you're doing with the environment. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, the big thing with methylfolate is you can't use your methylfolate if you don't have enough vitamin B12. And this is where people usually fall down, because what causes low B12 is having low hydrochloric acid. And it's so common, because what causes low hydrochloric acid is stress. Mm. It really does. It depletes hydrochloric acid. Zinc deficiency will deplete hydrochloric acid. Proton pump inhibitors, which are actually given for reflux, will decrease your hydrochloric acid a lot. Furthermore, SIBO and other and large bowel gut issues can deplete your B12 reserves. So that's very, very common. Okay. So then what happens is you start to become low in B12 and you can't use your methylfolate. Okay. Now, the other really important nutrient we need for methylation is an amino acid called methionine. Okay. Now, methionine is, you know, the best sources of methionine is animal protein. Okay. So if you're not eating animal protein and if you're not breaking it down because you don't have enough hydrochloric acid, you can become deficient in methionine. Okay. And then what happens is you simply don't have the nutrients in place to create what we call SAMe, which is the body's methyl donor. So this SAMe goes around the body and donates the methyl groups to the enzymes that do all of the things that I was talking about with methylation. Now, the other key thing is, you know, the last enzyme in this process to make SAMe from all these nutrients that we need is downregulated and works slowly if there's inflammation, right? And inflammation is why people are sick. Okay. So big problem. Now, the other big issue we need to think about with methylation is that the whole methylation pathway, one of the key amino acids with methylation is homocysteine. Now, homocysteine is actually made from methionine. So methionine is really important for making SAMe. It's actually S-adenosylmethionine. That's SAMe, the methyl donor. You can supplement with SAMe. Some people would have heard about it. Once SAMe goes around the body and does its job, it gets deactivated and then it will convert back into homocysteine. And homocysteine picks up methyl B12 and methylfolate. It goes around, picks up methionine, and this whole cycle goes around and around and around. Homocysteine is really key. Now, homocysteine is involved with methylation, but it's also a storage molecule for sulfur. That's its other essential role in the body. Now, sulfur is important for a liver detoxification pathway called sulfation. Okay, it's a big player when it comes to detoxification. And sulfur is required to make glutathione, which is our body's major antioxidant, which sequesters free radicals that occur with chronic inflammation. Now, if you have chronic inflammation in your body, particularly from mold illness, heavy metals, and oxalates, your requirement for glutathione is really, really high, and you will start to get more sulfur from homocysteine. So I know this is a bit complex, but this is why homocysteine, if you test it in the blood, can be low. It's because it has sulfur, and we need so much sulfur. And if you are depleting your sulfur because you've got so many issues with like heavy metals and mold and oxalates, you will try and get more sulfur from homocysteine. So your homocysteine levels are low. So you don't have enough homocysteine to run this methylation pathway. So I've done a video. It's complicated, low homocysteine. There's a video on my YouTube channel. It's because it's complex. But if you've got low homocysteine in your blood test, you need to make sure you're getting a practitioner that knows what they're doing with that, because you can't ignore it. Okay, so when it comes to oxalates, oxalates share the same transport carrier in the body as sulfur. So if you've got a lot of high oxalate, the oxalates hold the transport train. They get on this transport train. There's nowhere for sulfur to go, and you start dumping sulfur in the urine, right? So if you've got low homocysteine, you potentially and probably have oxalate problems. That will drive up a lot of histamine. So it's all linked. And then you can't break down your histamine in the central nervous system because you don't have enough, you're not methylating well. Okay, so it's not just MTHFR, is it? It's the whole picture and the whole environment. And the methylation pathway will directly impact the sulfation pathway. And the sulfation pathway impacts the methylation pathway. So these biochemical pathways, when these pathways are out, this is when people are really sick. Like, just just sicker than a bit of bloating and a bit of reflux and a bit of itchy skin. Like they have, they're chronically ill. They've done every product they've done. They've tried to treat SIBO. They've done Candida protocols. They've seen so many practitioners. They're never, never better. They will have massive neurological issues, chronic fatigue, chronic migraines, severe mood disturbances. Often they have multiple chemical sensitivity and multiple food intolerances. So when food intolerances are crazy out of control, when people are eating chicken and rice and that's it, this is when it's more than just SIBO. They might have SIBO, but it can be oxalates, and oxalates will cause issues with sulfur. You can't tolerate sulfur foods. Without sulfur, the sulfation pathway doesn't work, and you can't break down salicylate foods. So you become intolerant to oxalates, histamine, sulfur, and salicylates. So these are the plant foods that people can't tolerate. They'll say to me, I could eat McDonald's and I would be fine. But if I try and eat a bowl of vegetables, I am so sick. So the pathways are complex, but we can work on them, and it's about identifying the cause of why these pathways are skewed, not just treating an MTHFR gene mutation. So if you've got an MTHFR gene mutation and you just take methylfolate, it often makes people unwell because you're pushing the pathway without fixing without fixing what is going on the outside. Mm. Like fixing the mold, fixing the oxalate, fixing the low hydrochloric acid, fixing the stress, because methylation breaks down adrenaline, right? So you need to be working on all the things that methylation does to support that. And then I very, 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 if I never really use methylated nutrients in my clinic, only SAMe. SAMe can be amazing for PMDD and women's hormones, because it will directly break down histamine in the brain, or directly detoxify estrogen, and it helps make dopamine and serotonin. So those things are so good for bad PMS and bad PMDD that doesn't respond to normal protocols around how we would look at that. People come to my clinic and they're really quite beside themselves. They'll say to me, oh, look, I've always been an anxious person, but this is out of control. And I'll look at their form and they're taking methylfolate. I'm like, how long have you been taking that? And they're like, oh, you know, 3 months. I'm like, when did this chronic anxiety start? They're like, oh, about that time. And I pull them off it and they really calm down. So they're really powerful nutrients, but they shouldn't be prescribed without knowing what you're doing.
Mm, it's such a big picture event for women's health. It really, really is, and takes a true holistic approach, because as you know, with all of your wonderful wisdom that you've shared, we can really see that there's so many pathways that interact with each other. So you can't ever just isolate certain aspects of our health, because it's so interrelated, and it's really about digging deep and finding out what is that causative factor for each individual woman, not just like, okay, you've all got, you know, histamine intolerance symptoms, so it must be this. It's like there's so many different pathways that we can go down. So thank you so much for sharing all of that. It's been so informative, and you shared a lot of wisdom with us today. I really appreciate that. For our listeners who are hearing this and maybe hearing it for the first time, but are resonating with a lot of the things that you're saying, a lot of the symptoms, what are some of the first things that they can do today in the meantime before they get to a practitioner to help mitigate some of the symptoms?
Yeah, definitely. I think if you're waiting to see a practitioner, you can avoid high histamine foods. You can do that.
Yeah.
And try and reduce your histamine bucket. Now, the other thing you do need to do is you need to avoid the inflammatory foods, gluten and sugar at the same time, okay, because they're just going to cause massive, massive problems with inflammation. So that can help calm your histamines down until you see a practitioner that can look at all the different causes of your high histamine, okay, because that will just take the load off, okay? So that's just really important. I think, simply it is frustrating. Getting gluten out of your diet to reduce the inflammation will be a big thing that you can do, because it will destroy the gut, keep your histamine bucket pretty high, and that is just something that you can easily do. But it is, the diet stuff's hard, Harmony, because it's just like, I mean, look, if anyone really is at their wit's end, like I do have in my e-bundle the SIBO low histamine diet that I use, because that, if you're at your wit's end, if you do SIBO low histamine diet, it's going to reduce your histamine bucket so quickly, and it will make you feel a lot better until you can go and get tested for SIBO and get treated for it. But it's just hard, like, for me to say just remove histamine foods, because people then might, if they've got oxalate issues, they might end up eating more oxalates. Or like if they've got SIBO, they might be eating more FODMAPs.
The SIBO diet, like I said, like, it's not an easy feat, the SIBO diet. It is actually quite challenging, and you know, sometimes that's where people fall off the wagon a little bit, because it can be quite restrictive at the start, the initial phases, for sure. And I also think so many people, you know, going gluten-free has been thrown around like it's a trend, and I don't think people really understand why, or the impact of gluten on the body. So would you, I don't want to keep you here too much longer, but would you be able to share a little bit about that?
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so gluten, the human gastrointestinal tract cannot completely break down gluten, and because it can't completely break it down, it will start to damage the gut, and it can start unraveling the tight junctions, which are the tiny little, I think of them like a shoelace, and these tight junctions open and close to allow minerals and vitamins to enter our bloodstream. It's meant to do that. Now, that shoelace is held together by zonulin. Okay, now zonulin is disrupted and by gluten and other things, but gluten will start to unravel the zonulin, okay? And then you will get like leaky gut or hyperintestinal permeability. Okay, now I don't focus on that as a thing. It's a symptom, right? Leaky gut's a symptom of gluten intolerance or too much gluten or dysbiosis. And due to the inflammatory nature of gluten, it will cause it can stimulate your immune system to a point where it's releasing a lot of histamine. Okay. Now, the thing when people do go gluten-free is they will go and buy gluten-free products that are full of sugar, tapioca starch that feeds SIBO, rice that's a disaster for SIBO, due to quite a few issues with mold mycotoxins in rice, and they're doing themselves a disservice. So when you go gluten-free, things like paleo breads that are made more with nuts and seeds, if you don't have oxalate issues, is a better option. But that's the thing with gluten, is that it does cause that. And people will say to me, no, I'm fine with gluten. I'm like, yeah, but it's causing your eczema. Yeah, but it's causing your iron deficiency. They don't have SIBO. It's like you've got chronic low iron because of all the gluten you're eating. They might not even have like a bad gut. It will be causing deficiencies in iron in particular. Australian wheat is genetically modified to grow in a harsh climate. And it is very true. When I was just in France and I ate bread 3 times a day, and I did not get bloated or tired. It didn't affect me one bit. I don't know why, but there is something going on with our wheat production here where it causes quite significant inflammation.
Mm. Yeah, so, I found that in Italy as well. I could eat things I would never normally be able to tolerate here.
Yeah, it's really frustrating, but it's significant. So for most people, having a bit of gluten is fine. It's just understanding that if you're having it every day, it's going to keep your inflammation high and your histamine bucket high. You know, if you're getting like loose stools, you know, if you go out and have bread and pasta for dinner, and the next day you're on the toilet a few times more than you normally are, and you've got loose stools, that's inflammation. Your gut's inflamed from it. Yeah. So I just think people need to understand that it is. Australian wheat anywhere, whatever's happening here is causing chronic inflammation in people's gut, you know. And it's also, if you remove gluten, you might find you symptoms go, and then you don't have to go down the road of SIBO and SIBO treatment because it's harder. Yeah. You know, that's the thing. Like, it's way easier to remove gluten than it is to do the whole SIBO protocol. So it's a good place to start to understand if that's really a big problem for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Because like you said, some people remove it for like a week or two and they're like, oh, I didn't do anything. I still had all my symptoms, but there's just so much more to the picture.
That's so much more. And they'll go and eat gluten. They'll get the gluten-free bread. And the gluten-free breads are full of tapioca and rice flour, which are a disaster for SIBO. So it's more about, you know, just going more paleo, like just, you know, just instead of your bread, eat more vegetables. You know? But if you've got SIBO, that might not be good. So it's complex. You know, the thing with nutritional medicine is it's not given enough respect. It really isn't. Like, it is powerful. It can, nutritional medicine is so powerful. It can adjust and re-establish your biochemistry.
Mm. Absolutely.
It really can. Okay. So you can have immense health improvements and fix chronic health issues from nutritional medicine, and it's complex and it's not given enough respect. Does that make sense? So it's hard to say do this or that, because it's like, well, if I say don't eat gluten, if you start eating more FODMAP foods as a replacement, you've got SIBO, you'll get worse. Mm. So it's about, yeah. It's just about understanding that nutritional medicine is powerful, and you need to get a practitioner on board to really, really help you. And, you know, I say to people that are a bit reluctant with a diet, you know, I've got patients on methotrexate who would give their right arm to eat their way out of their autoimmune condition, and that's not their problem, you know. But if you can eat your way out of your health condition and then go back and reintroduce foods and have a balanced diet, that's really powerful. And you don't have to take medication, and you can get your energy back, your mood back, your hormones balanced, flat tummy, all of that. It's powerful. It will, you know, if you get the right testing, get the right practitioner for you, and put the time and effort in, you can completely reverse a lot of your chronic health issues.
100%. 100%. I mean, yeah, like, unfortunately, sticking to dietary protocols is probably one of like a compliance issue often. Yeah. And it's unfortunate, because it is absolutely so, so powerful. Like, it is nature's medicine. I mean, even our medicines today, like even our pharmaceutical medicines, they're derived from plants and then made synthetically, because they are using their chemical biostructure and everything to create a synthetic version of that. Like, that's how powerful they are, but people are not aware of that either. So diet is so, so important, and to really individualize it, because we all are so different. We have different constitutions. Even if we have the same diagnosis, there's different pathways and underlining reasons and stuff for that. So I think, definitely working with a practitioner really helps you streamline treatment protocols that are really individualized, and that is so important in the field that we are in. So thank you so much for sharing all of this amazing information and wisdom. It was really, really enlightening and very useful, and I hope everyone else got a lot out of this. So where can our listeners find you?
So my website is simply joannekennedy.com.au. That's where you can make appointments, and you can get my e-bundle on histamine intolerance, which is a 90-page ebook. I've got a video masterclasses, recipes, and some other things on that. So that's by my website. And I've got a YouTube channel, which is simply Joanne Kennedy Naturopath. There's a lot of information videos. Like, you can geek out on the methylation pathway if you want to. Look at that. And I'm on Instagram, Joanne Kennedy Naturopath.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks, Harmony.
If you missed the intro and jumped straight to the episode, don't forget that my Ayurveda Alchemist program is open for enrollment via application. This program certifies you as an Ayurveda lifestyle and wellness coach and will help you up-level your health and wellness business. You'll gain access to the ancient wisdom of Ayurveda and graduate with a knowledge of how to incorporate this timeless wisdom and holistic framework into your business so that you can create greater impact and boldly step into the high-level practitioner you know you can be. if you are ready to up-level your life and help transform the life of others by becoming an Ayurveda alchemist, head over to harmonyinspiredhealth.com.au and apply today. Thank you so much for listening to this episode and staying right to the end. Let's take our relationship a little further and connect in the world of socials. Follow me personally on Instagram at harmony.inspired.ayurveda. My women's health clinic on Instagram is harmony_inspired_health, or join our Facebook community, the Ayurvedic Soul Sister Tribe. Reach out on any of those channels and let me know if you enjoyed the episode, what type of episodes you would like to hear more of in the future, or simply just swing by and say hi. And don't forget to subscribe so that you don't miss an episode. And if you listen on iTunes, please give us a 5-star rating so the wisdom shared in these episodes can be spread far and near. Thank you so much, my friends, from my soul to yours.